Hi, welcome to part two of my speech. I'm going to cover mostly three of the four attributes of wise speech. Kim talked about kind speech, and the other three, at least the list that we're working with, are truthful or honest speech, beneficial, and timely. And as Kim had mentioned earlier, there are several lists on wise speech. And if you read in Bhikkhu Bodhi's book, the list he uses, it's more about abstaining from unwise speech, I think. Another way to think about that, and I think in the IMC PDF, it's listed this way, is there's unskillful speech, and there's skillful speech. So things like lying, harsh speech, slander, that's all obviously in the unskillful category. And we're focusing a little bit more on the skillful attributes of speech. By the way, everybody can hear me okay? Great. So again, truthfulness, beneficial speech, timeliness, and kind speech. One of the, I don't say tricks, but one of the important things to remember about these attributes is that it's not enough just to have one going. In other words, that you're speaking truthfully, but maybe you're speaking in a very harsh way. For example, it's easy sometimes to get righteous about something that you know this is true and this is right, but the way you're delivering the message can be harsh or condescending, not kind. So that would not be considered wise speech, even though it's truthful. And then many times it may be truthful, perhaps it can be beneficial, and maybe even compassionate. But the timing factor could be off. It may be that the person that you want to share this information with is not ready to receive it. Mm-hmm. Or perhaps their mood or their state of being, they're not able to take it in. So timeliness is also important too. Also, as Kim had mentioned, wise speech, of course, it starts from our interior, the way we think. And, you know, speech is basically our thoughts made verbal, you know, made expressed in the world. As I mentioned, it's like mindfulness out loud. But also wise speech shows up with the written word, as we talked about with our emails, with messaging, social media. I think that
media.
Speaking of media.
Am I done? That was quick. So, I think in especially in the, you know, the political climate and all that has occurred these last few weeks, it's pretty clear how speech can be divisive, how it can, you know, be us and the other. Can create a lot of very difficult and hard feelings and discord. So I think maybe the gift of all this is that it makes it really apparent how the value of wise speech, you know, being truthful, being kind especially, you know. So many people, again, they might feel righteous, might feel like, you know, they're on the side of truth. But the way the message is delivered, you know, the tone, it's not kind, it's harsh. And then, so the truthfulness, obviously it's not lying, it's speaking the truth as best as you know it. And the Buddha says that, you know, if you know what you're saying is not truthful and you say it, then that's obviously a lie. But if you're speaking, you believe that what you are saying is true, then you're, that can be considered wise speech, even though maybe the facts aren't quite right. But you really want to, you know, do the best you can. But it's about the intention, that you feel that you are speaking truth, that you are using wise speech. In Bhikkhu Bodhi's section on wise speech and on truthfulness in particular, I was very struck with how he compares wise speech with the Dharma itself. One of the translations of the Dharma is truth. It's the way things are, the natural law. And so when we speak the truth, we are in accord, we're congruent with reality. We are congruent with the Dharma. So I feel like wise speech is a very direct way for us to practice being in alignment with the Dharma, with the way things are. And, on the other side of that is that if our speech is not wise, if we tend to exaggerate or leave things out, omission, then we're not really in accord with reality, with how things are. It's becoming, you know, perhaps a little bit of a fantasy, or, you know, if this is reality, we're starting to kind of veer off. And that will affect our relationships, you know, how people trust us. They feel like we're not in sync, in alignment. People kind of know that what you say is, I don't know. You have to kind of take it with a grain of salt, perhaps. And on the other hand, if your word is good, people really appreciate that. There's a respect that is given towards that. People can trust you, can believe what you have to say. And there's a certain safety and a peace with that. It's, I think with all ethical conduct, it's a gift that we can give to others, the gift of safety, the gift that of trust. And as I mentioned, being truthful, it's not just a matter of whatever you say, speak, or write, that it's true. But truthful sometimes means saying something that is difficult to say, too. We can be dishonest by omission, by not quite saying everything. It's something I know for myself, being somebody who likes to please and not want to create discord, I might not say something that is perhaps not pleasing, or perhaps it doesn't cast a nice light on me. You know, it's something that I'm not particularly proud of. And so I can, you know, kind of leave some things out, or, you know, maybe be silent when something should be said. And so I know for myself, using omission as a way of not quite being fully truthful is something I have to be careful about, I have to watch out for. And there are times, and we talked about this a little bit in one of the questions, is that silence and the pause, that can be wise speech. There's a great example where somebody was asking the Buddha a question. And I don't remember the particulars, but I think it was a metaphysical question. And the Buddha kept silent. And the questioner kept asking, and the Buddha never replied. And then later, after this person left, one of the disciples, one of the monks, asked the Buddha, "Why didn't you not say anything?" And basically his answer was, whatever I said would have created harm for this person. There was no answer. If I told them the truth, that would have caused suffering for this person. And if I told them a lie, then that also is not skillful. So in that case, being quiet was a skillful thing to do. And that's where this wise speech is a little tricky, because, you know, we can tell you that, you know, there are four attributes of skillful speech, and there's ways that you can be unskillful with your speech. But, you know, in the real world, there's so many variables and complexities that you can't just rely on a formula to do this. You really have to be mindful. And you know, there's a lot of trial and error involved here. So certainly one of the things that's helpful is to pause or to reflect a little bit before you do speak, before you do hit that sin button, you know, before you actually put something out into the world. Reflect on that a little bit. You know, where is this coming from? Am I feeling angry or upset? Or am I coming from a kind place? Do I really know this to be true? Or am I just kind of making it up? Or maybe somebody else, you know, mentioned that, but I don't know if this is really the truth. So that pause, you know, to maybe be a little slower when we respond or offer something or send something out. And then while you're speaking, sometimes if possible, if you can be embodied. Our body is very wise, and often if what we're saying is not quite right, we can feel that. We can feel a little funny, or I think we all have our own way, but our body often will tell us if we're in accord, you know, if our speech is right and true and kind and so forth, or if there's something a little out. So just pay attention to the body as you're talking. And then the other thing is, afterwards, you can always reflect on what happened, on what you said. And, you know, sometimes that's painful. It's like, ooh, you know, I wish I could take that back. I wish I hadn't said that. And there can be a little remorse, maybe a little embarrassment, but that gives you an opportunity to, one, to be aware of your speech and when you're a little out of kilter. And secondly, perhaps make amends. Maybe a follow-up phone call or another email saying, oh, "I'm sorry, I shouldn't have said that, or wasn't very clear, or you know, I was in a bad mood. I was not feeling so great, and it's a little harsh. I apologize for that." And there you can be wise in your speech again. Getting back to the truthful part, I want to read just a little bit about, just want to quote Bhikkhu Bodhi, what he said about truthful, and this is in his book on the Eightfold Path. It says, "To realize truth, our whole being has to be wrought into accord with actuality, with things as they are. This requires that in communications with others, we respect things as they are by speaking the truth." So it's a matter of respect. "Truthful speech establishes a correspondence between our own inner being and the real nature of phenomena, allowing wisdom to rise up and fathom their real nature. Thus, much more than an ethical principle, devotion to truthful speech is a matter of taking our stand on reality rather than illusion, on the truth grasped by wisdom rather than the fantasies woven by desire." So that last sentence I find to be very powerful. Taking our stand on reality. I love the idea of taking a stand, and that respecting the Dharma, the way things are, the truth, is an important value to me. And because it is, I'm going to be careful about my speech and what I say in the world. I'm taking a stand with wise speech. Stand for reality. And then the other, the truth grasped by wisdom, rather than the fantasies woven by desire. So I take that as that I'm going to come from a place of wisdom, from what I know to be true, rather than by my desires, by what I want. So that can be a good way to look at where am I coming from. I know oftentimes when my truth gets a little wonky, a little out of place, it's because I'm trying to look good, or there's something I want, and so I'm manipulating a little bit. I'm emphasizing something, and something else is being downplayed or omitted because I want something. And it's good to be aware of that. Maybe it's okay to want that thing, but be careful about how you go about that. And be aware of your desire. You know, is this a good desire, or is there something a little off about this? The beneficial aspect, it's good to ask ourselves, is this speech helpful? Is it useful? Does it need to be said? Or is this more in the realm of idle chatter, gossip? What is the intention for my speaking? So the idle chatter, the gossip, I could distinguish that from what sometimes we refer to as small talk or maybe affectionate talk. How's the weather? How are you? That can seem like idle chatter, but there is a social construct going on. There's a way of being with people. But when it's just talking to fill in the void, I think we all know those cases when it is kind of chatter. It's just sort of like nervous or perhaps, maybe there's some discomfort. It's a way of covering over something. Maybe it's a way of avoiding some silence or something that is deeper, but perhaps a little uncomfortable, a little hard to be with. And so the talk can sort of just cover it all over, right? And then gossip. I think we kind of know that. Often, you can start talking about somebody else, and you start going in about, oh, they're kind of like this, and I noticed this about them too, and you kind of feel it's a funny thing. There's something that's a little salacious about it. Like it kind of feels like you're in cahoots, and so feels like there's some bonding. But you can also tell it's a little icky. It's not quite right. And I've heard it say that, one way to distinguish gossip is if that person was there next to you and you were saying these things, how would that feel? Would you do that with that person there with you? Timely. I think timely. About out of time, so maybe I better go a little faster on this. On the timely piece, I'll say this part. This is a Buddha quote, and this is in reference to using unwelcome or disagreeable speech. The Tathagata knows the time to use such speech. Why is that? Because the Tathagata has compassion for beings. So the compassion part, I think that's actually going back more to kindness, but if the compassion is there, if you're feeling kind, then the time to use speech. You can use disagreeable speech. When you're coming from a heart of compassion, this is actually a way to cut through some suffering here. So I think it's time for our next little breakout session. So we'll do like we did earlier. If you'll, same groups of four, are people okay with that for ease? So if you regroup and you're groups of four.
When? Oh. It's timely now.
Yeah. Okay. So, I always hear about the wise speech and being the harsh speech, and not to be harsh or phrasing and all that. But never hear about the perception part, because there is one person, the one speaking, and the other one is listening or hearing. And my own experience, many times, it's not in my mind, it's not harsh, but it's heard as a harsh thing. So even in the same example of the email that you gave, right? I understand that checking out, but was it harsh from the person putting it out? Mm-hmm. Yeah, so there's also a perception which I think that we also have certain responsibility on how are we perceiving, because when we're perceiving, we're also perceiving according to our own histories.
Right, our conditioning, right? Yeah, that's a great question, and the reality is that we don't always know how this is going to land for somebody, what we say or what we send. And that's why it's really important to know your intention, where you're coming from when you say something or when you send something. And then there's the little feedback loop, you know. If it did land harshly on somebody, hopefully that you can talk about that and work that out, you know, like, because like you say, something that can be said to one person is just fine, but to somebody else it could be devastating or triggering, and we don't always know people's history or, you know, what's going on for them. Yeah.
Can I add one thing?
Sure.
I'll just hold it. Oh, I got it. Yeah. I'm reminded of the comment that I made at the very beginning when I was introducing G, and I said he'd been here for a long time, and then that turned into a joke, because in our culture it's culturally acceptable to make jokes about age, right? And so that was something that we then kind of laughed about, but that of course was not my intention in saying it. I actually meant it in a kind and complimentary way, and there are cultures where the longer you've been somewhere, the more respect you get. We don't have a culture like that, unfortunately, always. And so that was sort of a moment where what I said didn't land the way I intended it, and it turned into something else, which was humorous for a moment. That was fine. It kind of connected us. But it was worth acknowledging. I hope I kind of smoothed that moment out. But, you know, stuff like that happens all the time. And it's a part of being aware is to just kind of be able to flow with that and hopefully have enough connection with the person to say what needs to be said afterwards.
Thank you. But in our tradition itself, I don't know if I'm not recollecting correctly, but where do we put some emphasis on our perceptions? Which one of the whole teachings?
In other words, if we're the receiver of the words? I think one thing you can do is give the other person the benefit of the doubt that maybe they didn't intend for it to be harsh.
Right.
And then check it out with them. Just, you might even share that hit me kind of hard, and you know, I don't think you meant that, but I just want to share that with you. Yeah. So it's sort of compassion towards the other person. Maybe they didn't intend that to hit me like that. Yeah. Okay.
There used to be a phrase, I don't know if it's still being used, but doing a reality check. Mm-hmm. And that's kind of checking out your perception, you know, and saying, well, I'm wondering if my intention was this, but I'm noticing, you know, sort of on an observational level, I'm noticing you're a little uncomfortable. Mm-hmm. So I'd like to check that out and hear more about, you know, what you're feeling, or if you're reacting to something that I said, something to that effect can be useful.
Right. Yeah, definitely that back and forth. So that's part of good communication. It's like, did that make sense to you? Did you hear that? Or do you have any feelings about that? That sort of thing. Yeah.
I have a question, if we have time. I'm wondering about how to skillfully act in situations where other people are using unwise speech. So like people who aren't even really aware of it. For example, I have a relative in who has a lot of idle chatter. It's almost like a steam train that's 500 cars long. It just doesn't really stop. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I want to be there and engage with her and you know, respect that, but at the same time, also don't want to be idly chattering. And, mm-hmm. Yeah, so I guess.
You have thoughts on that one?
All sorts of situations.
That's a difficult one.
Patience.
Patience, yeah. Yeah, it can be uncomfortable. Sometimes can feel like a no-win. Like if you say something, like, you know, you're just kind of going on, that may not land well. Yeah, there are people who talk a lot. You know, it's their nature. It's a challenge.
Yeah. Sometimes, I don't know if the situation would work for it, but sometimes people don't talk as much when they're doing something. So, you know, say, hey, how about if we, you know, mop the floor together, you know, dust the room, let's make cookies this afternoon. Something that maybe makes talking a little bit less easy. And then, no, that's compassionate for you. It's easier for you to be with them if you're doing an activity, something like that.
Cute. Yeah. I was just also going to add that sometimes it might not work in that situation. That's a tough one. But naming our need before the situation unfolds, so that we're not reacting in some way to the person's behavior. We're owning our own need. I'm coming into this dinner with a real need to talk about, or for this, or for that. Is in some ways, if not determinative of what the person does, at least allows us the integrity of I've named and owned my own need. It would be painful for me if we spent our dinner talking about the election or, you know, whatever. I'm just feeling really raw and vulnerable.
Proactive.
I wonder if you all can help me with that.
Yeah, thank you. Okay. And people are ready to get back in your groups?
Mm-hmm.
All right.
Okay, cool.
Same group?
So I just want to say, remind people that part of the wise speech is wise listening. And so really listen to the other members in your group. Try not to be thinking so much about what you're going to talk about. It's a real gift, that kind of deep listening. And also, while you're talking, you know, silence, gaps. Silence is a form of a wise speech, too. So I think as meditators, we know that one a little better. Yeah, so honor that, too. So the question I'd like you to work on this first round is, which attribute of wise speech do you struggle with? What's hard? Is it truthfulness, timeliness, beneficial, kindness? Is there an area that's a little more challenging for you? We can start with the person with the highest letter, closest to Z. Yeah. We can go back around.
Okay.
And that one, is there one person committed to it, or five, two people? Okay, please wrap up.
We have one more question.
We have another question.
Oh, it's technically four.
Okay, it's not 4:30.
I
got to be somewhere at 4:30, and I got to stop at the store.
It's not later than 4, for sure.
So,
I have to go at 4.
Please wrap up, and I have another question for you to work with. This one is... I'll give you a couple of choices here. One is to see if you can recollect a time when your speech was notably wise, when you really felt like you did it well. You said what needed to be said, or perhaps you handled a difficult situation, or whatever that means for you. Perhaps something you can recall where you were really in the wise speech. Alternatively, if you're having difficulty coming up with something, maybe think of a current life situation where it's pretty clear to you that wise speech would be helpful where it's maybe called for. So I'll let you just kind of work with either question, or if you have time, you can sort of hit on both. Okay? So the first person can start.
Baseball. What about it?
Okay, please wrap up and then return to the larger group. So please join the group, and what we would like is if people are willing.
They're still talking. Winding up?
Yeah, wind up, and we'd love to hear what you have to say, actually. So maybe you could... Well, I hope the questions were provocative or helpful, and looking at both what might be unwise speech and wise speech. I mean, we all go both places all the time. So, does anybody have anything they'd like to share? Anything that was in the group, or anything that's come up for you since then?
I can share. I wanted to share on two parts. I know there was three questions, but one was, what was the challenging part of the four qualities of wise speech for me is timeliness. Because sometimes there comes this urgency of like, well, now's the time to say this. I can come from compassion, but then when I go a little deeper, I notice that when I'm about to be timely, there's some self-righteousness. Self-righteousness might be present, so I have to check that. Or if I'm hesitating, am I... coming from people-pleasing and avoidance. Mm-hmm. So looking at timeliness is where I find my challenges. And then to recollect a time when my speech was wise, I did this a couple years ago, and I still practice it today, but I did it for a two-week everyday mindful practice, and now it's become more integrated, was do not talk about anybody else unless they're in the room. And I noticed, and at that time I had a partner, and when my partner would come home from, and you're like, who'd you see today, and how are you doing? Like 90% of my speech was omitted. Right. I had nothing to talk about. And it really was eye-opening for me to be like, wow. So then I started talking about ideas and feelings instead of other people. Mm-hmm. And it's just changed my world.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Beautiful. So, anyways. I just want to comment that first part about timeliness. Often when we talk about it, it's about maybe now's not the good time to wait until you can, the timing would be better for whatever reason, but the converse of that is that sometimes we don't say something when this is the time to say it, right? And we got, we maybe shy away from it. So, so knowing when the right time is, and it could be now.
I found that really interesting that your timeliness was about yourself. Because I've actually really looked more at timeliness about how the other person is at that moment. And so actually beneficial and timely are both kind of challenging for me. Because I can see where having a particular conversation would be really beneficial, and it's coming from the right place, and but maybe not a good time for the other person. And then I see the delay of, well, it's not happening, this conversation should happen, and then so much time goes by that it's no longer really relevant. Mm-hmm. So really making me reflect on, was it really relevant to start with?
Yeah.
Or was this something that I made up? Mm-hmm. You know, that in my mind at that time, this was really important at that time.
Yeah.
The conversation never happened. So maybe that was beneficial conversation internally that was just, you know, the recognition that this was about me and that didn't really need to happen.
Yeah. I think that's a great point. One is just how it changes over time. You know, that urgency or that need or, you know, what is you have to say. And then kind of acknowledging that there's a conversation going on, whether it's, you know, maybe not externally with this other person, but that dialogue is going on the inside. And so there's something being worked there.
Kind of like being on retreat and they tell you to write the note but hold on to it for a couple hours. Mm-hmm.
Right, yeah.
The conditions will change. Yeah.
And I think, like was talked about before, is that this wise speech, it's not just about, you know, what's the good timing for you, but the other person. So this whole dance involved, and it's one of the reasons it's so complex and so difficult. There's a lot of factors here. It's hard to get it, you know, just right. Mm-hmm. We will make mistakes, mm-hmm. right? No doubt.
Another part that came up for me too was the tone of voice used to say something. I mean, all conditions could be completely right on, but how I say it, the tone with which I say it, could be that perceived harshness from the other party. And I actually grew up with a lot of really hard speech, and it wasn't necessarily mean or harsh or unbeneficial. It was just the tone that was used to say it was really hard, and I would go into shutdown, just completely shut down and not hear it at all. And so that makes a really big difference in how people hear it and their listening ability.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Can I comment on that? Because that is, for years, was a struggle of mine, is my delivery. Mm-hmm. It would come across strict or harsh. And so before I would deliver, I would see it as a gift and cultivate generosity first. Mm-hmm. And when I come from that place that has some compassion and generosity, it comes out differently.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it comes out kinder.
So there's the link between intention and speech.
Yeah.
I was also just going to add to one of the ways you talked about practicing for that couple of weeks and then it affected you ongoing, that not to talk about people who weren't present. What I've ended up with as a guideline, it's a little softer, but it's had a similar effect, is if they were present, would I still say it? Because sometimes I do want to convey some information because there's a functional value, mm-hmm. or I'm conveying a sense of a connection for somebody that may be meaningful for them. And if that other person were there, and I would still say it, then I don't feel that I'm gossiping. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. It's not, I mean, I think there's a real value to what you're talking about, but for those of you who are totally intimidated by, like, what the, would I talk about, mm-hmm. You know, I've got to admit, I've said some things about Donald Trump I wouldn't say if he were sitting right in front of me, you know. And I have to think about that.
Okay, we're getting close to the end. Is there anybody else got something? Mary?
Well, this didn't come out of the group, but I was thinking about how in our culture, it's almost encouraged to gossip about celebrities and political people. And oh my God, right now it's just off the charts, you know. Mm-hmm. And this has been really good because it really makes me look at, you know, like things that I post on Facebook, or, you know, is it kind? Mm-hmm. Is it timely? Is it, mm-hmm. yeah, are we beating a dead horse here? Are we... You know, yeah. So, I think that's a good, it's a nice little nugget I got out of today's class.
Yeah, Facebook and other social media are great places for wise speech, you know, and we see a lot of abuse there. You know, I was thinking about wise speech, that what the Buddha is teaching, it really is against the stream when we look at our larger culture, you know, what's going on. So in some ways it makes me feel like it's even more important that we model something different, you know, that we don't go along with, you know, the way things appear to be going. Yeah, correct.
I'm a little fuzzy about idle chatter that isn't gossip. Can you say a little bit more about that? I mean, what I heard was that if you're speaking and that's a way to, like, cover up how you're really feeling, perhaps. Mm. But is that all it is? Is there more than that?
I would say it's speech that doesn't really have much purpose to it. So commenting on the weather, just talking in order to fill the space. It may not be talk about other people, which is what I think of as gossip. You know, that we're sharing information that may or may not be true about people who aren't present and maybe in a way that's not always flattering to them. Gossip is a little more specific. And I think G mentioned in his talk that there are moments where, you know, it's not like you need, like, every single thing you need you say is deep and profound and, you know, etc. There can be moments where what we're doing is we're connecting with another person. Mm-hmm. You know, I volunteer as a chaplain in the hospital, and, you know, you might think, oh, you get to have great spiritual conversations with people, and sometimes you do, but a lot of the time you're chatting, and, you know, they need someone to connect with. They want to feel normal for 15 minutes while they talk with somebody who's not their nurse or their family member who's stressed out, just, you know, talking. And that's really beneficial for people. So I don't feel that that is idle chatter, even if we're just chatting about nothing in particular. So the purpose matters. So it's kind of purposeless speech. Does that help?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Okay, well, we're nearing the end of our time, and maybe I'll just remind that, you know, it's another month of practice. You'll get the weekly emails with reflections at some point. Please connect with your mentor if you have one. And, you know, I know it's a busy month, so see what you can do. Our Wise Action session, the next one will be on January 8th. So the first week of January might be a good time to arrange to meet with your mentor. And have a wonderful month practicing with speech.
Lots of occasions.
We should have plenty of opportunity. But also just have a wonderful and safe holiday season. And yeah, may you all be well.
Thank you.
See you next year.
It's fun to say.
Next year, right.